Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The place to be.
Yes, the place to be. The place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Ugh. Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Vincent's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course, as the lacrosse player. Bismarck. No, wasn't it? Bismarck wasn't his
Lizmark.
Name? Lizmark. Lizmark. No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen-size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the fix.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. I was just curious. PTB Nation, let me know what you're
our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richer.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. The first time, well, maybe not, maybe the first time, we're having a continuation here. Scott Criscola in episode
282.
That's right, and with us immediately out of the gate here, Will and Charles from ProWrestlingOnly.com, and we are talking 1994 WCW. If you missed part one, go back and check it out. We went through Super Brawl and Spring Stampede and some of the stuff happening early in the year, and now we're going to do Slambery. We are going to do Bash of the Beach, talk a little bit about Hulk Hogan, talk a little bit about the direction of the promotion heading into the summer, and then we'll be back in a couple months, so we'll wrap up 1994. So where we left off last time, we were talking about Steamboat and Flair. We wrapped up Spring Stampede, but I want to jump right into Slamboree, a very interesting show, May 22nd, 94, from Philadelphia. And right off the bat, I want to ask you guys, and Charles, I'll start with you. Was this the most Northeast-feeling WCW show that you've ever seen?
Can you describe what you mean by that?
All right. So the atmosphere, the style of wrestling, the booking, the commentary, it felt very, maybe Northeast is the wrong word. Maybe I should just say Philadelphia, more ECW. To me, this is the first ECW feeling show of the major promotion. And it felt very just unlike WCW at the time to me, I guess is the way to
yeah,
say it.
Yeah, yeah. That I can see. Absolutely.
It felt like they made a concerted, and I liked this. It felt like they made a concerted effort to cater to that crowd, and they bought into it. The commentators played it up, and I really liked that part of it. You know, look a year later when WWF goes to Philly for King of the Ring '95, and just how bad they fucking boned it by not catering to that crowd, by just sticking to the book, and they got booed out of the fucking building. And here it was the template for them of how to run a show here, and I thought it was very adept by Eric Bischoff and crew. To make that happen. Am I off on this, Will, or do you agree?
I agree, man. I think that if WCW would have stayed this on this path, I'm not saying that it would have, like, because ECW was Philadelphia born and raised, but it would have marginalized ECW even more. Does that make sense? That if they would have stayed on the path that this pay-per-view was taking them, well, why watch ECW when you got this,
mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not saying that, you know, don't shoot me ECW fans, but I'm just saying this show is that good. And for the amount of matches to get over in this arena, in this spot, the way they worked, man, I think, I don't know, what an awesome show. And I think Philadelphia was only part of the reason it was an awesome show.
So do you think that the booking and the style would have felt the same if they were in, you know, wherever, Columbus or Columbia?
Well, I think different things would have gotten over differently. Yeah. You know, like, would the Broad Street Bully match have been as action-packed and as insane somewhere else? Probably not. But would Dustin versus Bunkhouse in the bull rope match, would that have really gotten over strong, like maybe in Georgia or, you know, North Carolina? You know, who knows? You know, would William Regal versus Larry Zbysko, would the crowd be as hostile? No way. But I think that kind of adds to that match, because that's kind of what you expect the crowd to do to William Regal and Larry Zbysko. So, you know, I think it has. And I think the crowd was much more forgiving to Terry Funk, who had been wrestling in ECW at the time, than they would have been normally. And I guess we'll talk about that when we get to that match.
Yeah, so let's kick off here. We start with the Legends introduction. Ole Anderson, Penny Banner, Red Bastion, Tully Blanchard, The Crusher, Don Curtis, Terry Funk, Vern Gagne, Hardboiled Haggerty, Larry Hennig, Killer Kowalski, Ernie Ladd, Wahoo McDaniel, Angelo Mosca, Harley Race, Ray Stevens, Lou Thesz, Mr. Wrestling 2, Tommy Young, and Terry Funk, who doesn't show up. Did you like the Slammery concept, Charles? What did you think of it at this time? Did you feel like it really kind of slowed at the beginning of the show up, and you get this, and then you get Sting coming out to talk about his match with Bockwinkel, and it felt like it took us a while to get started in this one.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Like, okay, this is great, but I think they could have put some of that in the middle of the show, or at least spaced it out a little bit. Just because, I mean, it's a Philadelphia crowd, you're playing with fire anyway, you better get something going on in the ring pretty quickly. So yeah, I agree with you there. Now, I'm sorry, but to answer the second part of your question, with the Legends concept, is that what you were asking about?
Yeah. What did you think about the concept as a whole?
I think that was a great concept. I think it's something that may have been a little bit... WCW, to me, is a promotion that sometimes would have great ideas that were just in the wrong time frame. So, I mean, now, like, I mean, we see WWE and all their emphasis on television and kind of de-emphasizing arena shows, and that's their business model. And that was the WCW business model when they were around, and it just wasn't good enough. And I think the Legends thing is another example of that. People would be really into a Hall of Fame now because people are more in touch with wrestling history, and it's something that it's acknowledged more in commentary, and it's not something that's just... The only thing that exists is what you're watching right now, and everything that happened before now should be forgotten. So it's a little bit different now. And so I think that it's something that would resonate a little bit more now if it was introduced now. So, I mean, that's not to say it didn't work here, but I do think it was just a little bit ahead of where wrestling fans were at this point.
Yeah, I almost feel like it should have been something for the arena before the show, and then maybe a highlight package or something. Maybe would have done a little bit better. Scott, what did you think of the overall concept of Slammery?
I didn't have a problem with it, but I want to disagree with you slightly on your earlier point, JR. I felt that the opening of all those guys coming out felt very Southern. And I think that's where, I think they would have been smart to try and book it from a Philadelphia Northeast perspective. Fast paced, get the matches going, get the crowd fired up. Instead, having all these old guys come out, half of them nobody, who the hell knows who Hardboiled Haggerty is? I mean, and I think that was a bad idea at the beginning. I think they should have done it in the Hall of Fame segment later on. But have these old guys coming on. Mean Gene takes forever to say their names, and oh my God. And then the Sting interview is brutally boring, very Southern. And I think that's what kind of got the natives a little restless. Fortunately, the opener is awesome, so they save their bacon there. But the concept of the Hall of Fame thing is perfectly fine. I mean, look, we have it now in WWE. But getting it off to that kind of start with these hard-boiled hack, and then you got Mean Gene trying to explain who these guys are because half the Philly crowd could give two shits. It was rough. It was rough in the beginning, in the opening. But the concept of Slammery is fine. It just needed to be executed better, that's all. The show itself.
All right, so let's get right into the opener. All right, make sure I wasn't on mute again. right into the opener. We have Steve Austin and Johnny B. Badge, so kind of two of our mid-card stalwarts that have been involved in the first two shows, and a little bit preview of their WWF days later. Face off for the United States title, go 16 minutes. Austin wins. I liked this climb up the ladder by Bad. We've seen him kind of work to earn the title shot, gets it here, not quite over the hump. Austin retains and bounces back from that tough loss at Spring Stampede to pick up a win here. What did you think of this one, Will?
Man, I loved it, man. I think this is just kind of reinforcing that, hey, I kind of need to go back into the the tape collection and the DVD collection and start rewatching old Johnny B. Bad matches. He's kind of been a discovery for me when watching these shows because I think he's a really solid wrestler, man. I've kind of enjoyed everything he did on these shows, man. I enjoyed the Jimmy Garvin match like we talked about last night. I enjoyed the DDP match and now the Austin match. And Austin is another highlight where, you know, everyone says that Austin was supposed to be this guy who, oh, you could tell he was going to be the next Ric Flair or the next world champion. Well, you know what, man? I'm starting to believe the hype. You know, Austin's a fucking ring general, man. There's a reason Vince McMahon brought him in to be a mechanic. It's because he's a great mechanic. And so this is another good match. Wasn't a fan of the finish, which, you know, but when you've watched enough 80s wrestling like I have, man, bad finishes don't ruin a whole match for you, you know? So, you know, but, you know, overall, man, thumbs up.
How about you, Charles?
Yeah, I enjoyed this also. I think both guys were really kind of finding their way in 1994, and this was just another example of that. I don't have a lot to say about it, but I liked it.
Scott, any thoughts before we move on?
It was fantastic, and I agree with Will 100% that Austin now gets it. He's like, he kind of was like Brett at this point. He figured out how to dictate matches, and Johnny B. Badd was getting crazy pops. I mean, those last 4 or 5 minutes were very exciting, and it was just a well-worked opener. It was good. It saved them from that drudgery of the first like 20 minutes of the show.
Justin, let me ask Charles a question. Sure. Scott brought up Brett and Austin. How would you compare the two at the time? I know you've seen a ton of 1994 from both guys.
I think Brett was still the better worker. They were at different points in their career, so it's hard to do a direct comparison because Brett was already at the top of the mountain and Austin was still trying to get there. So I would still say Brett was ahead of him at that point. But, I mean, Austin was improving by leaps and bounds every time I saw him.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Justin had to play host there for 2 seconds.
Hey, anytime you need to step in, you can go ahead and do so. Not a problem here. All right. So up next, we have Terry Funk versus Tully Blanchard in a Legends match. This was part of the Slamboree concept, as we mentioned before. They go to a double DQ. This one, it was fun for what it was. It was kind of cool seeing Tully again. A weird ending, though. Funk goes for a pile driver off the second rope, and they fall. They try to do it through a chair, and they just kind of stumble backwards. And I liked it a lot, maybe up until that closing moment, but then you kind of think about what it is and what it was supposed to be, and you're fine with it. Charles, what did you think of this one?
First of all, there's something very, very wrong about Tully Blanchard getting Chris Jericho's future babyface music.
Yes, I noticed that too.
That's true. Yeah, I agree with that.
I have moral problems with that. He's Tully Blanchard.
By the way, theme music, we need to talk about quickly. Vader's at this point, one of my favorites, but go ahead.
Yeah. I
agree.
I don't know. This was too much of a squash. Like, I felt like Tully was kind of disrespected in this match, to tell you the truth. There was a moment that cracked me up when they were outside the ring and Funk did this pile driver on Tully Blanchard and Nick Patrick is yelling at him to get back in the ring. And it's like, the dude just got pile-drived on the floor. Give him a break. He's not going to just get up and get in the ring. And also, I don't know. I mentioned that it was kind of a squash. Like, Tully didn't get much offense, but also all the commentary was focused on Terry Funk, and it just felt like a burial.
Well, I mean, do you think part of it was because they knew what was coming later with Terry Funk? I mean, do you think that's part of it? They knew there was a reason they focused on him, right?
Yeah, I mean, and Terry Funk was figured into future plans, and Tully Blanchard wasn't.
Right,
but,
and I think that's probably the main reason.
Yeah, I just still don't like it.
No, that's your opinion. That's fine, man. Will, what did you think of this one?
Man, we last night on part one, we were talking about preconceived notions or, like, you know, matches that have reputations, and this match had a reputation as being kind of like a fun, wild brawl, and Terry Funk is fun and wild, but man, I did not enjoy this match. Mm-hmm. Man, it was a match where even though I tried to not let other people's judgments of it affect my enjoyment, I had higher expectations because of who was involved. You know, kind of like earlier, we looked at like Terry Taylor versus DDP and go, oh, wow, that was kind of good. On this one, it's like, oh, wow, you have two of the greatest wrestlers of all time, and oh, wow, it's not that good. And, you know, that finish, man, with that chair, like, what the hell were they thinking? You know, it seemed like he was trying for that pile driver, and when the pile driver didn't go, it just seemed like, okay, I'm just going to sit in this chair with you between my legs.
It was terrible. It really was.
I mean, that finish was just horrid, man. And you know, I mean, I'm not talking about finish like booking, because, I mean, when we talk about finishes when we're reviewing these shows, you know, we got to distinguish between the booking of a finish and the execution of a finish. And this was a bad executed finish. I mean, it's a cool spot, right? Could you imagine like someone actually getting, you know, a pile driver through a chair? That's pretty devastating shit. But when it feels like he just gave up on the pile driver, but forgot to let the guy go and just sits in the chair with the guy upside down between his legs. Not as cool, you know, so.
It was odd. It was odd. Scott, any quick thoughts on this one?
I loved seeing Tully again. The match was, the match was what it was. Tully probably hadn't wrestled in a while. I don't know if he was on any indie stuff at that time. But, I mean, it was okay. Nothing earth-shattering. What was it?
What did you think, Justin?
Yeah, the same. I mean, it did not live up to the legend. I agree with you on that. Just kind of they meandered around, and then the finish just really confused. I mean, I kind of forgot about the rest of it because the finish was so damn confounding. But, you know, to Charles's point, the focus was so much on Funk. But again, by design, I thought they knew he was sticking around. Tully wasn't. They didn't really seem to give much of a shit about Tully even being there. I don't know if that dates back to the problems he had earlier or if Bischoff just didn't care about him. Or they didn't want to waste the time on him. But it was clear they were focusing on Funk and that he had something else kind of in the works for later in the night.
Okay, I was just curious. Excellent. I want to make sure we were all on, because, like, I really thought,
we agree. Yeah.
Like there were matches, like, I mean, you guys are really shocking me with these final thoughts, because I know last night when we were talking, like, you know, we all kind of agreed, like, hey, man, Austin Muta, not too bad of a match, you know, or what was the other one? Or, like, Regal versus Arn, where we all thought it was a great match. You know, I thought these matches would have been contentious. And so I thought this was another one where I was going to have to pull up my sleeves and start arguing with you. And, man, we're just having a regular powwow here. This is cool.
All right, well, maybe we'll find one or two as we move along, because we have our MVP of the night, or one of them so far, and that's Lord Steven Regal stepping in the air against the it wasn't quite the Living Legend yet. I believe it was called the Legend, Larry Zbysko, coming out in a non-title match, defeats Regal at 11:30, playing off a match they had on Saturday night as well, and Zbysko would go on to actually win the TV title on TV later on as well from Regal. What did you think of this one? Where does it rank in the Regal matches so far this year, Scott?
I love this match. I can't believe I'm about to say I love Larry Zbysko. I don't know what it was about having Larry Land, and I think they should have reprinted the roller coaster T-shirts. Love Larry Land, and I think this was a fun challenge for Regal. And I thought again he wasn't as methodical because he dealing with an older guy who probably hadn't been wrestling much. So, in a couple of years anyway, since the end of the Dangerous Alliance, I suppose, but. You know, it was very methodical again, but Zbysko held his own, and Regal was awesome as usual, and it was a good little match. It was definitely a good little match.
How about you, Charles?
The crowd wasn't into it, but screw them. I thought this was really good. I mean, it started off with some comedy and then became more aggressive, where they were just firing shots at each other. Great finish. I really enjoyed this a lot. So, yeah, that's pretty much it.
The thing I liked about Zbysko always, and we'll see it here and with his eventual feud with Scott Hall in 1997, it made everything feel very personal, and he did a great job with that. And the disdain you could feel that he had for Regal at this point, and that's always what, I don't know, maybe it was realistic from him, maybe it was this is real life persona coming out, but I always felt like he really, you could feel the hatred from him or the anger or the disdain. Like, he conveyed that very well, and I thought that came across here with him and Regal and really made you rally behind him. Will, what are your thoughts here? Does this hold up to the Regal matches we've seen this year so far?
Oh, absolutely, man. In fact, I think on my YouTube channel, I'm going to load up the Regal Larry Zbyszko a feud. They had four matches. They had this one, a match on Pro, a match on The Clash, and a match on Saturday Night. And I'll load up all four of them so you guys can watch the series, because all of the matches are worked kind of differently. So I think y'all will really enjoy them. Like, they're all great matches worked completely differently, and I think you'll really enjoy them. But I kind of like the fact that this match with Stalin Larry Zbyszko and Methodical Steven Regal takes place in Philly, you know? It's like, because it does. It starts slow, you know, and both guys, right? You know, Regal, because he wants to hold on to that title, so he's going to start slow because he's wearing down the clock. And Larry, that's his motto, right? You know? But, you know, I was watching an indie match with Jamie Dundee, JC Ice, and he stalls and he bullshits and he jaws with the crowd the whole match. And by the end of the match, when there's like just one high spot, the whole crowd goes batshit, right? Like, somebody pops Jamie Dundee in the mouth with like a clothesline or something, and the whole crowd just fucking goes nuts. And at the end of the match, and you know, and I'm not always a fan of this, Jamie Dundee just said, "See, yeah, that's called working. I worked y'all," like that, right? Because, you know, and that's what Zbyszko does, you know. Regal comes into this match overconfident because in the matches we've seen, right, Regal's the technician. He's the chess master. And Larry Zbyszko, who's retired, coming out of the commentary booth, comes in, and Regal thinks, well, fuck, he's just an old man. He's washed up. I'm the chess master. And in the match, you see Larry become the chess master. But he's not only outsmarting Regal, he's outsmarting the crowd, because by the end, the crowd's going fucking nuts for this shit, you know? And we mentioned last night about how great Regal was in, like, making every move count. There's an abdominal stretch spot. Once again, you know, I love abdominal stretch spots. Larry Zbyszko is using his old tricks, grabbing the rope while he has Regal hooked in the ab stretch. So Larry's arguing with the referee. But as he's arguing with the referee, Regal grabs Larry's foot that's hooked on Regal's leg, unhooks the leg because Larry's not paying attention. He can't clinch it in because he's arguing with the ref. And then he's able to get the hip toss to end the spot. Just those are the little things. You always have to pay attention to what Regal's doing, because most people are probably focused on Larry arguing with the ref. They're not looking at Regal actually unhooking the foot. You know, little things like that just make me mark out. And Regal, you can see Regal as the match goes on, gets pissed off. His offense gets angrier. You know, everything looks snug. Everything looks hurty. You know, the ending was a little abrupt, but, you know, it really does. It sets up a great series of matches. So thumbs up, way up, man. Love it.
Yeah, and I like the finish here, too, with Regal Regal losing and Zbyszko picking up the win. I'm glad they continued the feud, because there was definitely juice left. It would have been a little disappointing if Zbyszko just lost here and they moved on. So.
Right, yeah. No, and I'll make sure, like I said, to get those matches up where you guys can watch them. So I'm really excited about y'all seeing that.
Looking forward to it. Okay, up next is a continuation of a feud we discussed on last night's show with Spring Stampede, and that is Dustin Rhodes versus Bunkhouse Buck in a bull rope match. They go 12:47. Rhodes gets the win, and you think, all right, we're moving on. Here's the end of that feud. And then out comes Terry Funk. They beat the crap out of Dustin, and looks like the stud stable kind of solidified even further, and Dustin's still stuck in this blood feud with I want to call it by his real name.
Bunkhouse
Buck. Robert Parker. And his crew. Scott, what did you think of this one? Did you think it was better or worse than Spring Stampede? About the same, different for just as
better.
Good reasons? Better?
I thought it was better. I thought it was a good telling a good story. it was nice to see kind of Dustin really start dictating himself now. And Bunkhouse Buck really was kind of unheralded in this run of matches. But I enjoyed it a lot. And Dustin's becoming one of the most sympathetic faces in all of wrestling. I mean, just when you think, yes, I finally did this, and the crazy bastard Funk, who had that like 15-minute or whatever it was, felt like 15 minutes, was more like 5 minutes, but this long, drawling promo earlier that I'm not leaving the screen. I'm going to take care of the. First of all, he said, son of a carpenter. Jesus, Funk, don't you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, that was funny. I laughed at that.
For Christ's sake, you've been feuding with the guy for 25 fucking years. You don't know what his dad's job is, for God's sakes. My dad built attics, baby. Yeah.
You know, my dad is a plumber. He's not a carpenter.
But the match is great. And I think, again, you see the dictating of by Dustin Rhodes and being a good face in peril and kind of helping work the match. And it's tremendous, tremendous.
Scott, I can't believe we're not going to get one Funk impression after all. You did Dusty, you didn't even do Funk.
Yeah, I know. we still got one more paper.
All right.
Still got one more.
Looking forward to
we'll
the Funk.
There. We'll get there.
Will, did you chime in on this one? Who hasn't? You? Oh, both of you. All right, Will first.
I love this match, man. It's, you know, the crowd's chanting, we want blood. And I think that's the only thing that's missing. I kind of wish they would have gotten all bloodied up here too, like they did in the last match. But what I loved about this match is that the entire match revolves around crotch spots. It's how many different ways can a Bunkhouse Buck get crotched, you know? So early on he gets crotched, with the bull rope. Then when they're outside, you know, getting tied up, he gets crotched outside by the post. And then when they get back in the ring, he gets crotched on the top turnbuckle. So, you know, I mean, to me, this was a match about crotch shots, you know. And the shots with the rope and the belt again, just nasty, vicious shots, man. And it's kind of wrestling I love, man. Thumbs up.
You like the Funk part of it?
Yeah, you know, I mean, whatever. I mean, you know, it serves its purpose because, you know, next month, I think we're going to see Dustin's kind of like a masterpiece of work. So, you know, for that purpose, you know, it's worth it.
All right, Charles, what'd you think of this one?
I thought this was another really good match. I liked Buck pulling Dustin's shirt over his head and pounding him. And then, you know, Buck was trying to tie Dustin to the ring post and lay his shots in. And, you know, Dustin had his big one-arm comeback. And I thought they did a lot to take advantage of the bull rope gimmick that I really appreciated. And, I mean, there wasn't blood, but they still did a good job of getting over the brutality. The Terry Funk run-in, you know, was what it was. It leads to some more things that are coming down the road. And it's possible that he was talking about the band The Carpenters. So maybe he had a reveal that, you know, Dustin Rhodes' biological mother was Karen Carpenter. So I'm just giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I thought he was doing it to, like, throw everyone off so they didn't know he was coming after Dustin. So maybe they thought it was meant someone else, you know. The son of Jesus, me, the son of a carpenter. the son of a carpenter.
There you go.
Well, the son of a son of a carpenter.
Oh, the son of a son of a carpenter, right.
Yeah, I liked this one. I liked the Funk return. It kind of it played off and paid off the Slamboree concept. It kind of made it worth it having these guys here and having Funk in the building. And I thought it made sense. I thought they played it off well, and you know, they kind of gave it away earlier. It was still pretty good, and it was good to see this feud continue because I thought it had a lot of juice left to see Dustin continue to march through it.
You know, just on that point, if only they had done a Legends reunion at Bash at the Beach so that the Horsemen could beat up Hogan.
Yes. Oh, would have been the greatest moment in the history of the business, I'll tell you right now.
Yes.
Oh, would have been awesome. Oh, my God. It would have been great.
Busted his hand in the parking
lot. Beat up Fat Beefcake, too.
Yeah, definitely. And Jimmy Hart while we're at it.
Yeah, take them all out. Why not?
Yeah, that Duggan guy.
Oh, you and Duggan. All right, so next up here on the card, we have Ric Flair defeated a mystery man, Barry Windham making his return. The World Heavyweight title on the line, and Flair wins. Did you think this is a weird position to have the world title? We still got two matches left and the Hall of Fame inductions. Something kind of unlike WCW. They never really seem to do this where they have the world title in the middle of the card like this. Also, did you think it was Colonel Robert Parker oversaturation? Like, why did he need to be involved in this match and this feud here? He had so much else going on. And thirdly, do you remember the rumors of this being the Mr. Spot going to be Hogan? I mean, they were clearly teasing it. They kept saying 6'7", blonde, former world champion. They were obviously wanted you to think we were going to see Hogan here. And clearly they weren't just going to throw Hogan as a surprise out on a show, but it seemed like they were trending that way. Charles, I know it threw a lot at you, but what are your thoughts on the match, about the surprise, and about Parker being maybe a little bit played out here?
First, we have to mention that Michael Buffer said the referee in charge will be Randy Peterson.
Yes, Randy Peterson. He says it multiple times, too.
Yes.
He says it again later.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I couldn't stop laughing at Randy Peterson.
Randy Peterson. And he says it like right in his face directly. Like it's like he knew he was fucking with him. You know, the referee is Randy Peterson. Right in his face. Like, I don't even give a shit enough about you to learn your name, and you're right in front of me, buddy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the hype for that, like making people think that they're buying a show and that they might get Hogan as a mystery, was just deceptive, and I'm not really a huge fan of that. But you know, Barry obviously is still hurt, is not himself, and probably should not be having a match at this point. But so it was sad to see Barry Windham, you know, broken down to this point when he used to be this great wrestler. But this still wasn't terrible. You know, we talked before about how a lot of Flair matches, you know, Flair takes pride in calling matches in the ring. This does feel like something where they put a little bit more thought to in advance, because the finishing sequence is pretty intricate. But, you know, in a perfect world, Barry would have come back and been in good shape, and, you know, would have been able to transition maybe to the Dustin, Bunkhouse Buck, Terry Funk stuff after this match. But, you know, it wasn't to be. But yeah, I enjoyed this. It wasn't like at the standard of your 1980s Ric Flair versus Barry Windham match, but I don't think anyone expected that.
All right, Will, I know you stepped away for a moment, but just to catch you up on the questions we laid out for this one, what did you think of the mystery aspect of it and the tease of Hogan with the 6'7" blonde former world champion? Did you think this was overkill of Colonel Robert Parker? And what did you think of Windham being brought back in the spot?
Man, Barry Windham was looking rough.
Yeah.
Man, I just took one look, because I knew Barry Windham in 1994 was going to be rough. But I was hoping that there'd be some of that magic left over from the 80s, you know, and it wasn't there, man. It was sad is what it was.
You know what it reminded me of a little bit? Meatloaf.
No, because Meatloaf had a number one hit in 92 or 93 whenever he released that horrible album, man.
No, but if you saw, like, Meatloaf was on American Idol a few years ago, and it was terrible.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant, like, Meatloaf was a hit in the 70s, disappeared until, like, the early 90s, and then comes back with a number one hit, you know?
No, but it just, the whole thing just definitely felt very Meatloaf. For whatever reason.
I don't know what the hell you're talking about, man. Fucking Meatloaf. Anyway, Barry Windham did not remind me of Meatloaf. Maybe a little bit of like Lynyrd Skynyrd's third drummer, you know, or something. But just it was bad, man. It was like, you know, early on, I thought, okay, this is going to be okay. But, you know, we criticized the Flair Steamboat match. And I know Flair Vader wasn't up to the standards for some when we talked about Flair matches. But those matches had clear transitions. Like, there was a reason, like, Flair would go back on offense in the Steamboat match. In the Steamboat match, he had been punching Ricky in the face or dropping knees on his face the whole time. So whenever Flair would get in trouble, he'd just like do a palm strike or a punch to the face. Ricky's like, shit, man, my grill's starting to get tender. And then Flair would go on offense. And there were those transitions. In the Vader match, Vader would miss a big move or something, so Flair would attack the big guy, you know, or vice versa. Flair would miss something, Vader would squash him. And this, there was really no transition between who was on offense. It was like, okay, I'm going to chop you now, and now I'm going to do my offense. And now, okay, Barry, I'm just going to roll into the ring. I'm going to do a suplex into the ring. Now I'm on offense. There was no transition there, man. It was two guys kind of trading moves, and it was just so disappointing for Flair standards. And for those of us who remember Barry Windham fondly, even just 2 years earlier as like a tag champ in WCW, man, what a bummer, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not over exaggerating when I say this, right? This was a bummer seeing him in this condition.
I agree. It was very disappointing. I remember this at the time. It was very disappointing to see him at the state. And I mean, it's disappointing anyway that he was the surprise. And then when you saw him lumbering out, it was even worse. And you could tell that I feel like the only reason they even brought him in was because they wanted someone that fit Hogan's description. Like to me, that is the only reason they even went to him, was so they could tease Hogan. Because he clearly doesn't look ready to come out. I don't know if he had, still recovering from an injury, or just wasn't in shape. He hadn't been, he was never a guy that really took it seriously and was working out all the time anyway. This guy that kind of coasted on natural genes.
His knee was completely reconstructed, and then it shattered during this match.
Right. So it's like, it really felt to me that it was forced to fit the Hogan thing, and it all kind of just fell apart. And probably a guy that just should not have been out there at this point in this match. Will, what did you think of the placement of the world title being this point in the card?
Well, considering that the match sucked, good. but considering that it was a world title match, of course that's, but I think that, like, we're talking about how bad Wyndham looked, and like you said, they were so intent on someone fitting the Hogan profile, right?
Right.
I think they knew, looking at Wyndham, and we don't know the backstage scoop. We don't know if Wyndham was clean or doped up. I mean, I don't know. I don't. Maybe a shoot interview somewhere fills us in on that. But maybe they looked at him in his condition and said, "Man, there's no way we're going to get a good match out of this." Like, they knew Flair Steamboat was going to be solid no matter what. I don't think they had the same faith. So this might have even been one of those last-minute decisions. Hey, we're going to bump you from the top slot. We don't want to end on a down note.
Right. All right, Scott, any thoughts on that one?
Oh, I agree with all of it. I've always been a Barry Windham guy, but he looked totally – he looked like he just woke up from a nap. It's like, Barry, you're on. I'm on what? Oh, okay, and here I am. I agree with JR 100%. I think it was just finding a dude with blonde hair to tease everybody. But, I mean, really – if you're going to tease Hogan, you're going to put him like fourth from the bottom or fourth from the, Like, I don't think that the whole theory of it was just stupid. And it was executed as such. So fortunately, it was not last, because everything about it was wrong, just wrong on every level.
All right. So after this, we have the Hall of Fame inductions with the Assassin, Ole Anderson, Harley Race, Ernie Ladd, the Crusher, and Dick the Bruiser. And then we move into our tag team title match as Cactus Jack, and now with Kevin Sullivan, defeats the Nasty Boys in a Broad Street Bully match. Dave Schultz from the Flyers was a special guest referee. 9:56 just pays off that feud. Charles, I'm going to turn to you on this one a little bit. Can you refresh us why Sullivan's in this match? When did he come into the promotion, and why is he in here for Payne? Do you know?
I think the Nasty Boys in the storyline were bullying the Equalizer, and then it was revealed that the Equalizer was Evad Sullivan, and that he called himself Evad because he was dyslexic and his real name was Dave. And yeah, so it was just, and I think Max Payne had departed the company, and so they just kind of,
He comes out here, doesn't he, at the end?
Yeah. He gets involved. Well, okay. Yeah. So maybe that was later, but I think Sullivan just kind of ended up in the spot, but maybe because he had come back to WCW after an absence, and they found kind of a role that fit for him in this feud. I don't know that there was much more to it than that. Mm-hmm. I do think this is a match that also holds up really well, though. Like, I still think it was great. I didn't really care for, like, the altercation between Dave Schultz and Jerry Sags, but I felt like everything else was really good. And I even... I think the post-match angle with Max Payne and Evad, like, getting their revenge, like, that was in some ways even better than the match.
Yeah.
Hey, can I interject real quick here?
Yep.
About the Evad thing? In 1994, I was watching Zero Wrestling. Okay, I was it was at a time when I was not interested in the product, but I was flipping on TV one night, and I saw that angle Charles was talking about with Evad getting bullied by the Nasties, and he's talking about how his big brother is going to come, and he's going to get revenge on the Nasties for being mean to him, right? Isn't that what happened, Charles?
Yeah, that's what happened.
When I watched that 20 fucking years ago, man, you know, if I remember correctly, Evad was even like doing like Hulk Hogan flexes. I thought the Big Brother was going to be Hulk Hogan, and that's how they introduced Hulk Hogan into it. Now, obviously, it was Kevin Sullivan, who was about 3 feet shorter, but still, at the time, I thought his Big Brother was going to be Hulk Hogan, because I thought that Evad Sullivan was kind of like their Hulk Hogan ripoff, you know, kind of like the Renegade was the Warrior ripoff. I didn't know anything. I just flipped it randomly one night, you know, but that's what I thought. So I just want to throw that little story in there.
I like that story. It's an interesting one. And I completely forgot about the whole bullying thing until you mentioned it there, and it was a great angle. And I love the thing too at the end with the revenge, and it really brought closure to that whole feud. Did you think it hurt it at all, though, that it wasn't Payne that won the titles with him? Like, after all they had been through? Like, did you feel it was a little bit like, I mean, I guess if he was leaving anyway, it kind of marginalized him. Like, he couldn't get it done with Payne. And I know they played up the injury, and then it comes out, I guess, as revenge. But did you feel like the closure would have been a little bit more full if they had Payne and Cactus win the titles?
Well, was Payne, was Max Payne, was he also Man Mountain Rock?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, man, I mean, who is?
No, I know, but really in the story, I mean.
In the story,
yeah,
cares.
I do. I agree.
Thank you, Charles.
I don't agree. Dissension.
You and Scott can go enjoy your Man Mountain Rock hating.
Dude, we're going to do the new Will and Scott show. It's going to be a 38-part series on the magic of William Regal. And then we're going to do the divorce series on Triple H, where we disagree on every Triple H match ever. Because Scott and I are married to Regal, but we are divorced on Triple H. That is a fact, man.
So. But they love each other. So if they can't.
They do love each other.
Well, you know what? On the Charles and JR show, we're going to open up every episode with Man Mountain Rock playing the national anthem on his guitar. So that's how we will start.
Hey, guys, I don't know if y'all listened to the last Goodwill Wrestling I did with Lars Fredrickson, man. He goes off on like Van Hammer not knowing how to play guitar. He's like, look, man, you should at least know where your fingers are supposed to be placed in your music video, man. You know? So make sure that if your listeners haven't heard that show, man, listen to Lars Fredrickson go off on Van Hammer not knowing where the fingers go on a guitar. Anyway,
you can hear that right at placetobenation.com. You click the podcast button on the right hand side, bang. Goodwill Wrestling right at the top, and you can check that episode out.
There's the plug. Good job.
Ooh. All right. Anything else we want to talk about with this match?
Yeah, I've never.
Well, go ahead. Look, you know, we've been going for a long time. You're gonna have to hold my hand a little bit with this, you know.
Yeah. No, I loved it, man. This to me was the highlight of the match. You know, the I had said that the match from the month before, to me, it felt more Attitude Era. This to me felt like one of those wild, out of control Memphis brawls. This is kind of like one of those brawls where if somebody was walking, it's because they were trying to run away from the other guy or go help their partner who was in trouble. So any walking segments in this match always felt like they had a purpose, like they were on a mission to go somewhere. Like there's a spot where Sags is trying to escape Cactus, okay? But Knobs is working over Sullivan. So Sags goes towards Knobs to help him with Sullivan. And Cactus is chasing Sags with the trash can, levels Sags with the trash can, then drops the trash can on Knob's toes to help Sullivan out, man. Just like a little segment like that, to me, it makes all the difference in how these brawls are shaped. And that's why I thought this. And then to have the Broad Street Bully, the hockey player, who's the hockey player, Schultz?
Yeah, Dave Schultz.
Yeah, Dave Schultz.
Not Dr. D, though.
No, not the Nazi, but to have him go 1-2-3 in Philly, man, that crowd went batshit. I caught up in this match, so real thumbs up for this.
Scott, your thoughts on this one?
It was an exceptional match. The Dave Schultz thing, I think, was a little overplayed, but you know they needed to get the Philly crowd to kind of relate. But no, good match. Good match.
All right. Up next, then, we have our main event, Sting versus Vader for the vacant International World Heavyweight title. Rick Rude has been scheduled to defend against Vader, suffered a career-ending back injury in Japan. where he had won the title back from Sting after losing it at Spring Stampede. Sting said he didn't want to be handed the title, so they put it up for the vacancy here. 13:54, Sting wins, ends the show as champion. Did you think it was odd, Will, that they had Rude regain the title as a heel in Japan over Sting to come back here in a face role against Vader, kind of in a tweener role? And does this lend credence to your thought that Flair Wyndham was supposed to be last, maybe, and then they switched it when Sting put in the got put into place? I mean, how early on did they know Rude was not going to be on this show? Because I can't imagine them running Rude Vader with Rude basically being a tweener as the main event of the show.
Yeah, man. I think it strengthens what I said, but I agree with what Charles said before, man. And that's that Rick Rude should never be a face. You know, no, people don't want to cheer Rick Rude, man. They want him gyrating his hips and they want to punch him and, you know, and they want him like, you know, making passes at their girlfriends. You know, that's what Rick Rude's supposed to do. You know, so, I mean, yeah. If
his name isn't
if,
Rick Polite.
How long have you been waiting to say that, man?
About 10 years.
His name isn't Rick Polite. Dude, I love
Maybe
it.
It should have been.
No shit. But, you know, but anyway.
You man, totally derailed it.
You did, man. I was like, I'm trying to think of other rhymes that we could do, you know, Vader the Hater, you know. And anyway, but so, you know, but I think they knew since Sting and Vader were capable of having great matches, this is a way to have a great match to end your show, right? You're gonna have it. These are two guys who know how to work with each other. They always have good matches. And the Rick Rude thing, man, it's tragic, you know. But I love this Sting Vader matchup. I love this match. So I mean, does anyone here? Let me throw this back at y'all. Does anyone here really think Rude versus Vader would have been better than the Sting Vader matchup? Seriously.
No.
Scott.
Well, you broke up for a minute, Will. What was that question again?
Oh, I'm sorry. I said, do you think that if Rude would have actually not gotten hurt and he would have gone against Vader, do you think Rude Vader would have been better than this Sting Vader matchup?
I don't know how the whole package would have been, at least for the fans. I think the Philly crowd was a little dyslexic to begin with. I don't think they were. I don't know if it would have come off better on television or in the arena. As a Sting Vader match would have. I think Sting Vader ended up being a better choice, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I can't imagine Rude at this point would have had a great match with Vader. I mean, 2 years before, in 92, yeah, probably. They would have beat the shit out of each other. But
right.
Rude was so wrestling gingerly at this point, and it just wasn't the same. You could tell he was almost wrestling tentatively, and that's never a good recipe for anything.
Yeah, and so with the match itself, I love the match. I love that, you know, Vader, we've talked about throughout the shows last night and tonight, always focusing on the body part. I love how Vader just focuses on those ribs of Sting. And then when Sting mounts his comeback, you know, one of my favorite spots is Vader's chokeslam. How strong is Vader to pick up Sting and just drop him so viciously into the mat, man? Christ, you know. So to me, this is another like great matchup in their you know 2 year feud here. Another huge thumbs up for me.
Charles, what did you think of this as a way to wrap this show up?
Yeah, I think Vader versus Sting might be my favorite feud that WCW did in terms of in-ring action. This was another great match in the series, and what's funny about this is that this is probably the worst Vader Sting match on pay-per-view, and I still think it's fantastic.
Right.
So I loved this. Those moments, like Vader, like I said, I mentioned before, was just so good. He might have been the best wrestler in the world at this point, but Sting had those brief moments where he would do those comebacks, like the moment where he just starts throwing like punch after punch at Vader, just trying to pull together something, like kind of, I guess, right before they did that ref bump. I love those little moments where the crowd just gets behind Sting for a few seconds and then Vader just cuts him off. Just
I don't know. I think that Vader brought something special out of Sting that I'm not sure that any of Sting's other repeat opponents, like, you know, Ric Flair or Lex Luger or Rick Rude, really did.
All right, so that puts Slambery in the books, and we are now three pay-per-views in. We have one to go. At this point, you know, I want to ask this here before we get to Bash of the Beach, because this is the original question. Where do these three pay-per-views rank in subsequent order when we're talking all-time great pay-per-view stretches? You know, this whole thing started because we discussed Rumble, No Way Out, and WrestleMania 17 in 2001. Does this hold up? Does this compare to those three? Is this the greatest triumvirate of pay-per-views of all time, Will?
It's not the greatest only because we have one more show to go that trumps these three that we've talked about. So I'm kind of giving away my answer. But having said that, if you told me I could only watch on a desert island the three 2001 WWF pay-per-views or these three WCW pay-per-views, I would pick these WCW pay-per-views, all three of them, any day of the week. You know, so that's where I stand on that.
How about you, Charles?
Well, I was planning on putting Will on a desert island and making him make that choice. But now I don't have to, so thanks for saving me the time. I don't think it is right now, just because I think Super Brawl 4 is a solid show, but it's not a great show. Mm-hmm. Spring Stampede and Slamboree both are fantastic shows. I mean, my answer is probably going to be fairly similar to Will's. But I think if I had to choose between these, I would probably still pick these three simply because the last two shows are so good. But it's kind of like saying if you had to watch, I don't know, it's like one of these things is not like the other, kind of, with Super Bowl. It's not that it's a bad show, it's just that it's not quite at that level.
Well, let's get Scott's take, and then we'll definitely readdress this one after our next show, because maybe it swings the other way. And something we debated at the time, Will, if you remember, with Scott Keith, was, you know, which way would we swing with these? Would we go to Super Brawl? Would we go to Bash of the Beach? And I think we all kind of thought Super Brawl early on, and now we watch this, and maybe it's the other way. Scott, what do you think? Where do these three rank? And I know you were a little bit disappointed in Slamboree, weren't you, at the time, after you watched it the other day?
I was. I'm not as overly crazy about that show as maybe you guys are. Maybe it's the weird match placement. There's a couple of individually good matches. Love Austin, Johnny B. Badd, as we mentioned. Like Funk Tully, like Larry and Regal. And I like Rhodes and Bunkhouse Buck, but I feel the last three matches kind of dipped for me.
Wow.
I kind of took the stuffing out of it. So I have to say that, no. If I had to pick, I think I have to agree with Will that I think we have to wait for the next show, and I'm going to have my criticisms of that one too. I think Super Brawl and Spring Stampede were a good start, but Slamboree kind of knocked it down a little bit for me.
Yeah, man, some dissension. This is interesting. Because I thought Slamboree was a slam dunk, you know, and I like Super Brawl a lot more than Charles did, you know, even though it did have the worst match of all four shows with Jungle Jim versus the Equalizer, but. Yeah, I thought Slamboree was a slam dunk, man.
Well, it seems like Slamboree was more of a traditional WCW card, a traditional wrestling card that had kind of the undercard that built, and then you had the mid card. Whereas Slamboree and Spring Stampede, it's like they stacked the show with all matches that meant something and guys that were involved in something. They didn't have any filler. Super Bowl felt like a normal pay-per-view where they would kind of fill the early part of it, maybe putting new guys over, getting other guys involved. Whereas those two shows, they cut, and even this third one, they cut all the shit out, and it's all just important matches, all getting a lot of time.
Well, you know, that could also be because, you know, they traditionally blow stuff off at Starcade, and so Super Brawl is the first pay-per-view after Starcade. And so, you know, I think that's probably the build you should see.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like starting with Backlash and moving towards SummerSlam, or maybe Judgment Day and moving towards SummerSlam or something. You know? My thoughts.
I like your thoughts. And we're going to take a moment to pontificate on them, because we're going to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to hit our final pay-per-view, Bash of the Beach, and we're going to wrap up with some kind of general question. So let's take a quick breather. We'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now...
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but What about David Crockett?
She likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get you all until I get you, Paul Jones. Oh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. If you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. And there they are, with the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to Return of the Hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and The Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, Attitude Era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
All right, Nation, we are back towards the tail end here of part two of our summit talking about WCW 1994. We have hit Super Brawl, Spring Stampede, Slamboree, and now we're going to wrap up with Bash at the Beach, a very important show in WCW history, a very interesting show, kind of a dichotomy as well, because you still have that classic WCW feel. You get a lot of the 1994 feel that we've had so far, but towards the end, you have this almost transition in the main event to the second half of the year and where things were headed. And we have some other general questions we'll get to as well. So why don't we get right into this show here from Orlando Arena, Orlando, Florida, July 17th. Shaquille O'Neal and other celebrities were in the house. A lot of hype, a lot of hoopla here because Hulk Hogan had now arrived. We had the big parade with like 13 people there at Universal Studios. We had the big contract signing. Ric Flair has now gone heel. Has sensuous Sherry in his corner. We had seen her in the crowd at a previous pay-per-view. And she's here now with Flair. Mr. T in the house as well. Kind of harkening back to WrestleMania 1 and 2 with T in the mix. And yeah, it almost feels like a complete reboot by the end to 80s WWF, but we'll get there. So let's start now back in 94. Lord Steven Regal in contention for our 1994 WCW MVP defeats another guy in contention, Johnny B. Badd, to retain the TV title. Regal makes it unscathed out of this run, as far as pay-per-view goes, with his title. Wins in 10:40. Badd is replacing Sting, who had been injured and misses the show. Regal, of course, had lost the title temporarily to Zbyszko, won it back from him, and now walks in here with the title. Charles, what did you think of this match? Did you think Badd was a legit threat? And what do you know about Sting's injury? Was that legitimate? I'm guessing so, because I don't think they would have taken him off this card.
I think this... No, the Sting injury was worked. It was because they had done something the night before the show on Saturday night.
Okay.
Where it was a Flair-Sting match. They did an interactive WCW Saturday night where the fans go to the main event. Flair-Sting won, and then the finish was... And Sherry was banned from the building. And then for the finish, Charlie Chaplin came in.
Yes, that's right.
And attacked Sting. And then Hogan came in to save Sting from Charlie Chaplin, and then it turned out to be Sherry. So,
fuck?
I think they probably did that so Hogan wouldn't have to compete with Sting for, you know, a crowd reaction or whatever. Because Hogan, like, that first clash in June, Hogan was booed by the live audience. And Sting was cheered, so maybe they were afraid if Sting was around as a contrast that it might reduce the crowd support for Hogan or something like that. I'm not sure, but yeah, that was worked. For Regal versus Badd, I actually wasn't sure about this on paper, and they pulled through. I think it was probably the lesser of the Regal matches that, you know, we've covered so far, but it was still really solid. It was cool to see a different side of Johnny B. Badd. As far as being a threat, I don't know that he was, just because the match wasn't as aggressive as other Regal matches, but I do think that he got something out of him and they had a solid match.
What do you think, Scott?
It's funny. It's almost like we've been doing a tournament of the best mid-card guys in WCW, and this was the finals, because these are the two guys that have just been so over next to Austin. Just working so hard and Johnny B. Badd, as much as we want to make fun of him, and, you know, you have the stupid... I like how everybody bitched and moaned about all the stupid confetti that was around the ring for the whole card, and it stuck to everybody, and that annoyed me, actually, all that shit all over the ring. Now, maybe that wasn't this show. Maybe that was... No, it was this show.
It was this show, yeah.
It was this show, and they're all like... It's got crap. People have crap all over them. Oh, it's so annoying. But a great match, and 10 minutes was nice and tight, nice, tidy, and Regal stretched him out, too. Great job. Perfect four for four there for Regal in these four shows. Excellent job.
What do you think, Will?
Man, I'm with Scott on this one, man. I four for four for Regal. For me, four for four for Johnny B. Badd. I think, Scott, was it on the last show where you mentioned that every opponent comes out sweating? You know?
Oh, man, yeah.
If you notice early on in this match, you know, Regal is in full-blown English shooter from the pits of nasty mind mode. You know, it almost felt like he was being a little bit uncomparative, like, hey, who's this dandy over here, you know? And, you know, it was like Regal's being kind of a dick. And so, like, every time Badd would have to break a hold, he was working for it. He was flipping around, twisting and turning his arms, you know, just trying to break these holds. But then when Badd would hook a hold, Regal would just pop off and level him with a forearm to the
awesome.
Feet. You know, and you're like,
awesome.
Oh, shit. No, you know? And so, like I said, this Regal is just one of those guys, you pay attention to the details, man, and you just start loving it. And so then Badd gets it. Like, you just, this, something clicks in his face. So then there's a reversal, and Badd ends up slamming Regal down on his shoulder, you know? And he's like, hey, motherfucker, I'm giving you a receipt, you know? And then after that, you know, Regal starts doing his, like, the sick offense, you know, that nasty offense, those double knee lifts, the headbutts, the forearms to the face, He nails a drop kick, which was really stiff as hell, man. And he's doing it while selling the arm that Badd had been working on all match, you know. Mm. And there's a part in the match, and I hope I'm not taking too long. I really like this match a lot more than most people probably do, because to me, like, this is an epiphany. This is like a wow, I never knew this match existed or was so fun kind of thing. And so there's a part where Regal is knocking Bad down with forearms, but Johnny B. Bad is still hooking on to the knuckle lock and not letting go. And so he's getting nailed with the forearms, but still holding on to the arm, and keeps getting nailed. And then, finally, there's a point where Regal rolls out after he gets nailed with the Johnny B. Bad punch. What, did he have a famous name for his punch?
The kiss that don't miss, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It changed from the Tutti Frutti to the kiss that don't miss to Dreamland.
What was the last one?
Dreamland.
Well, Regal, obviously he'd been scouting the guy because he knew, man, if he stays in that ring, he's losing his title, right? So he rolls out, and this is like Bad saying, oh, you're going to roll out. You think you're smarter than me. And then he dives out, man, and I did, and he just takes everyone out. The ref, Dundee, Regal, just everyone's out because Johnny B. Bad, dive through the ropes. But whatever, man. The point is, just this match was just like a total like eye opener. Like, wow, man. I really do. I want to see more Johnny B. Bad. I want to see more Johnny B. Bad versus Regal. I didn't know that Sting was supposed to be in this match, because now I'm kind of bummed, because those guys had a really good series in 96. So, great match, man. Loved it. Just great way to open up a pay-per-view.
At least we can do to celebrate his run here.
Holy shit, that came through my ears, man. Like God coming down and talking.
I'll tell you, there was just enough dead air on that clip that I didn't even mean to time it as soon as you finished talking, but it was playing and then it hit right as you finished. It was meant to be.
I bet you guys didn't know I could sing like that.
I thought that was my cue to shut the fuck up, man. I'm sorry. Damn.
The ghost of Johnny B. Bad smiles proudly upon us today.
Yeah, love Johnny B. Bad. Huge thumbs up, man. Y'all enjoyed it too, man, because like I said, I didn't even know this match or this series of matches between the two existed. So rock on.
Good stuff. Johnny B. Bad in the running for MVP. All right, Vader, another guy in the mix here for MVP, defeats the Guardian Angel by disqualification. Now, the Guardian Angel is the new name for the boss who had been stripped of his duties back at Spring Stampede. We didn't see him at Slamboree. Reappears here to cap off this feud. Vader wins by DQ in a time where I thought this is where Vader should have won clean. I thought Spring Stampede was a little surprising. They had him beat Boss clean, and then they do the DQ here. I did not like the Guardian Angel gimmick. I thought it was forced. I hated how they had to keep playing it up during all the commentary. And it feels like Boss had kind of lost his way without his kind of security blanket of a gimmick. Scott, did you agree with that?
Yeah, they definitely he definitely seemed out of place and out of shape. And it just, they might as well just call him Big Bubba again and just go back to his old ways. So this was just, now you're finding every type of,
they will by the end of the year, but yeah, it's,
yeah. But I mean, they're trying to find every type of law enforcement personality and throw it on him. And, this was forced, and the match, I don't think the match is very good either. I don't think it's as good as the match 2 months prior.
Well, I'll give you that, but I think it was still pretty good. I don't think it stands to the Spring Stampede match. I agree there. Charles, what'd you think?
I thought this was another really good match. I don't think it's at the level of Spring Stampede, but it's not. I mean, with a better finish, it might have been pretty close. But you know what? That finish didn't even bother me too much. I think just because it was, I don't know, I kind of like DQs when they're done well, and that felt like a pretty cool screw job in a way. I think because it kind of got over his new persona a little bit, because he hesitated before using the nightstick. And also I thought that like the idea of like a nightstick that's, I don't forget what it's called, but like it's so small, so like a manager can hand it to a wrestler and then it expands. I think that's a perfect wrestling weapon, because like that's something I want to see more in wrestling, because it's so easy to hide.
Right.
Like I want to see a match at some point where a wrestler like pulls that out and it's so small and they just make it huge and bop someone over the head with it. So that's I want that at some point in my life.
Like Stevie Ray Slapjack.
Yeah.
All right, Will. I know you're saying you seemed incredulous at the comments so far.
Well, no, I mean, I agree it's not as good as the other one. The other one I gave a huge thumbs up to, and this one I merely gave a thumbs up to, you know? But to me, the thing that hurt this was the ending. And I think the spirit of the ending was fine, like Boss getting caught. I think the execution of the ending kind of sucked. Like, the ref bump was really weak. And then it took forever for the referee to see him with the nightstick. Like, I thought they extended it too long for him to have that thing in his hand, you know. Right. But the match itself, I thought, man, another match where these guys are just, like, fighting it. And, you know, and I don't know if it was Scott or you, Justin. Somebody was talking about, like, guys going in there and looking like they're fighting for their lives against Vader. Mm. Well, that's what they're doing. They're fighting for their lives because Vader's such a stiff, evil worker, man, you know? And so to me, this was another one of those. Like, to me, the highlight is Vader tries for a clothesline, and, like, Boss gives him, like, a one-handed power bomb.
Yeah.
You know, and follows it up with a body slam, but it's like, fucking somebody gave Vader a one-handed power bomb. Like, holy shit, you know? Or like Vader does that like a really sweet sunset flip, but he can't quite grab onto, and you would think, okay, this is a flub spot. So Vader's trying to grab on to pull in for the sunset flip. And I don't know if this was planned or if this was one of those things like, oh shit, he's not grabbing me, I'm just going to drop on him. So he drops on Vader, you know, gets a huge pop from the crowd, you know? And so they're just like little counters like that, or like, you know, where they're just like countering each other with these sick bombs. Like, they're just throwing bombs. And like I said, Boss Man, his punches were great. I liked the match, did not like the ending, but man, this, to me, this pay-per-view is 2 for 2 at this point.
And I think the thing with Vader, too, you can always tell the level of respect he has for a guy, but by the level of offense he'll give. Like, you know, Sting always gives him a ton. They work hard together. Yeah. And same thing with Boss here. You can tell there's a lot of respect between these two guys because Vader lets him beat the piss out of him.
Or even Flair, man. Flair right. chops the shit out of Vader, you know? But I do agree with both of them that the Guardian Angel, man, come on. Just call him fucking Big Bubba. You know what I mean? He's a Big Bubba, the prison guard. They would have wink-wink. You know, they could have gotten that because wasn't Ray Traylor an actual guard in the prison before?
Yeah, yep.
So, I mean, there's no way in hell that they could have, like, stopped him from being Big Bubba, the prison guard. So, and, you know, old school NWA fans would have been like, oh, shit, man, there's Big Bubba. Cool, you know? So.
And it is cool when they go to it at the end of the year. I was excited for that when they went back to it. And I mean, he goes back to heel, but... the Guardian Angel thing is just weird, and it kind of made him look like a pussy, honestly. The Bockwinkel stripped him.
Watch the Guardian Angel vignettes, man. That sets this up, man. Charles knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know all about it. That's it. I don't really have anything to add.
Well, even Shivani at that one point where he takes out the nightstick, he's like, "He can't do that. He's an angel." And I was just like, "What? Come on!" And I'm like, "Oh, that's stupid." All right, great match, though. And then some other tag match happened. And then we go to the U.S. So the great tag match that is next is Terry Funk and Bunkhouse Buck taking on Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson. Now, we haven't seen him on pay-per-view since Super Brawl. Makes his return here. Dustin went begging for him to come be his partner. He even told him, you know what, Arn? I don't even need you to really get there. I just need you to have my back. You can wait on the apron. I'll take care of business. I just need you there to prevent any other interference or anyone getting in my face as he goes for revenge on Funk and Buck. You know what, Will? I'll let you take it from here because I know this is your favorite here. Did Will pass out because he was so excited about it?
You can't find the mute button again.
That's exactly what it was, man. It was the mute button. Man, I was all blah, 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 blah.
What a fucking setup, too. Will, take it over. This is your match.
Man, I was waiting to take this baby home, but nah, I'll go on another rant here. To me, this is not the best match that we've seen from these pay-per-views, but to me, this is the definitive Dustin Rhodes performance. Okay, this is like one of those matches where I'm really focused on Dustin Rhodes on this match because I know he works the whole match. You know, Arn doesn't come in until the end, but I love everything Dustin does here. I love his early shine, you know, where he just like outsmarts the Funk and Bunk is what I call him. Bunk and Funk, I think is the name I gave him. And, you know, there's a point where early on he gets a headbutt from Terry Funk, one of those sliding headbutts. And so later on, instead of giving Funk a headbutt as a receipt, he uses Golden and makes them headbutt each other. And then he takes the other one and makes them headbutt the guy. So, you know, things like that. He does an awesome bump to the outside, which I think y'all know, where he kind of rolls off the ring and off the steps and into like the walkway. And then inside that whole ending, like, you know, one of the things that people are talking about right now in this Goldust performance are those great face and peril sections that Goldust is doing, you know, with him and Cody Rhodes. And you're seeing it all in this match. He's doing those face and peril sections. And Arn's there, come on, give me the tag, Dustin, give me the tag. You know, and then he fights back, and it's the same spirit, and the crowd's with him, and the crowd's into it. It's the exact same thing you're seeing today. Like, that whole thing that we're praising Goldust for today, 20 years later, he was doing 20 years ago in this match. So, you know, as a whole, is this match really, like, one of the greatest tag matches ever? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's one of the great Dustin performances that you can see the things that we're giving him credit for today. You can see that 20 years ago in this match, and he just does it beautifully. Then the hot tag, the turn from Arn, because Arn's like, fuck yeah, I'm going to kick some ass.
Yeah, but it's that big exaggerated fist pump.
Yes, dude, when you said that, my fists were clenched, man. I was like doing it, right? I was like reenacting it like I was in a eighth grade play for
Nicholas Nickleby, baby.
Nicholas Nickleby, baby. And
son of a plumber.
Son of a plumber. And so then that DDT at the end was nailed perfectly. The dejection, the celebration, man. They treated the first, what's Fuller's family called? The
Stud Stable.
The Stud Stable. They treated them like the NWO in the back with the champagne celebrating. I thought it was magnificent, man. I thought from beginning to end, not just the angle, but Dustin's performance from beginning to end, one of the greatest things I've seen, man. Just the way it was. I like the match too, but just the way it was all set up, man. I just loved it, man. 3 for 3 on this show.
I'll tell you what I loved about it too, because one of my biggest pet peeves is when they do a heel turn in a tag match where the guy wrestles. And it drives me nuts. And I love it here that they don't do that. That they have Arn on the apron and they built it. They set it up with the story, so it made sense. And then they have Arn not even touch anyone until he turns on him. And I love that they did that.
And the announcers did a good job of even casting doubt. Like, why isn't he tagging Arn? You know, he's showboating. He wants all the glory for himself.
Right.
You know, it's like, wait a minute. Hey, they have a point. Maybe Arn didn't plan on turning on him.
He got pissed.
But he brought this on himself. Man, beautiful storytelling.
It was really good. You know, I thought about it recently because Scott and I are in 2008 in our written reviews. And it made me smile because Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes did the same thing when Cody turned on Holly. They didn't even do the fake fucking fighting. They just immediately beat the shit out of him and turned on him. And I just love that because it always just – it just takes me out of that moment of suspension of disbelief when the guys wrestle and then he turns, like, it was predetermined, but they fought anyway. It is always one of my pet peeves in wrestling. But Charles, what did you think of this one? Did you like the storytelling? And was Arn's, like, over the top in a good way mannerisms really add to this as well? Because I felt like him during the face and peril segment really added to it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with everything that's been said. There's not too much I would add to it. I guess really the only thing that I would say is that, I mean, I wonder if Dustin looks kind of stupid for trusting Arn in the first place. Like, why, you know, why would he go to Arn Anderson of all people?
Right. But, so do you think it was telegraphed? I mean, did you know at the time it was coming?
It was telegraphed. I mean, maybe it was foreshadowed. I think that's a better way to describe it. Like, I actually think it was extremely well executed, except for the fact that why did Dustin trust this guy at all? I'm glad that Arn got involved in the feud. It's just funny to me that he needed someone that he could trust, and he went to Arn Anderson.
But Arn was a face at the time, right? Because obviously he was wrestling Regal, you know?
He was a big face at the time, but Arn Anderson had a long history.
Yeah. Yeah, he had been a face since 1993 with the Horsemen reunion and everything.
But man, if we counted all the times baby faces were stupid in wrestling, man, Christ, we'd go around the earth a few times. So I don't know. That doesn't bother me.
I think even if you knew it was coming, the anticipation of it made it great the way they did it. So it was like you're just waiting for it, and then you get it. You know, a funny story I meant to tell about this show, by the way. So my grandparents, of all people, actually had an illegal black box, and we used to try and go over sometimes when we could to watch the shows. And one of my friends had one, too, and we'd get over there. I'd go over there for most of them. So my cousin, for this one, my cousin went over to my grandparents. Now, they didn't have a VCR hooked up to the black box because they were told it was going to screw it up. So he brought his video camera over, set it up in the living room, and zeroed in on the TV, and had everyone that was there, my uncle and my aunt and my grand, weren't really allowed to talk. They had to go in the kitchen. And he recorded it for me with the video camera of the television for us to watch.
Oh, shit.
So that is how I saw the show originally and got to enjoy the debut of Hulk Hogan and the awesome Arn Anderson heel turn. So.
And that is not true. The black box does work with VCRs.
Oh, it definitely did, because my friend recorded everything with it. I mean, he had his from 91 until 03, I think it finally died. We saw pretty much every pay-per-view we wanted on that bad boy. But for some reason, my grandparents were hesitant to do it, so we had to rely on the old video camera on the TV screen. But
nice.
It was great.
That's awesome. Scott, what did you think about this match, man, this tag?
Well, I think it's because Arn Anderson's awesome, and you're a grandson of an egg-sucking dog, Dustin Rhodes. You're just stupid, and Arn Anderson's the greatest of all time. Where are you? Where are you, Dennis Stamp?
Sad thing is, I'm trying to do my funk with a cold, and it's like,
well, I think you waited.
It sounds like funk having puberty. So it's like,
we're like 3 hours in, so maybe you should have done it in the first 10 minutes.
I thought you were doing Les Nickleby, man. trying to do that.
It was like Terry Funk and that fast food kid from The Simpsons.
Oh boy.
But you know what? Anytime I see Arn Anderson turn on anybody, it puts a smile on my face. Arn is the quintessential stablemate. You know, like Arn is just a great guy to have in a stable. And yeah, it does come off as Dustin being stupid. Like, of all people that. When does anybody ever trust a horseman? I mean, please. It's of course the son of the guy who the horseman beat the shit out of. I mean, unless you're a WCW fan for like 5 minutes, I think from a mile away, I think anybody saw that was just a stupid thing to do. The match is awesome, and Will, we've been saying all night, Dustin got it. I mean, there's the genes in his blood of knowing how to be the perfect babyface, and whether it was laid out as to how the heel turn was going to happen. Like you mentioned, JR, that maybe Arn wasn't planning to, but he's like, well, you're gonna tag me in or what? And then just beat the shit out of him. I don't think that was the case. I think the whole premise of it was that, you know, that Colonel Parker got to him or whatever. I don't know. But regardless, it's an awesome match. Superb heel turn, because Arn just rules the universe, and it's a great match.
All right, so we head now into Steve Austin versus Ricky Steamboat for the US title. Austin's still a champ. Will, what did you think of Parker with Austin, and what did you think of the Stud Stable in general as the premier heel faction? Did you think Austin was kind of an outlier? Like, did you think he didn't fit in that at this point with the way the Stud Stable is going with Funk and Arn and Buck?
Well, yeah, man, I didn't think he fit. I think wrestling company's complete lack of faith in Steve Austin is sad. And Charles, I think, might back me up on this. When Austin was feuding with Chris Adams in USWA in 1991, Charles, 1990, Austin was fine on the mic. Him and his wife would get out there and talk shit, or Chris Adams' ex-wife, whoever it was at the time, and talk shit. And they had a great feud with Austin carrying himself. I don't get why they would put Austin with the man. I mean, him and Pillman as the Hollywood Blondes, you know, I'm not a real big fan of the team in-ring wise as much as some people are, but I thought they were great as like these cocky heels. You know, I don't get this complete lack of faith in Austin when, you know, he kind of proved, hey, he's kind of like, you know, one of the most important talkers in wrestling history. You know, when you gave him a shot, it just, not that he had that anger yet that Stone Cold had, but he was perfectly capable to be himself. I mean, if anything, they should have had, like, you know, if they wanted him to be there with the second, then you put fucking Sensational Sherry there. She would have fit in with the whole Stunning Steve, kind of played up the thing she did with, like, HBK and the model and all that stuff, like, where she gushes at his good looks and his blonde hair and all that crap, if need be. If you're going to give him a second, give him someone like Sherry or a valet, like when he was in USWA. He didn't need Robert Fuller to talk for him. And I like the stud stable, but yeah, man, Austin, this lack of faith in Austin, man, is so depressing. I mean, it eventually made him who he was, but the fact that these people were so blind, yeah, I don't get it.
And not only that, I mean, what I would add to that is that Colonel Parker is 6'5", and no manager should be 6'5". You should never have a manager that's taller than the wrestlers he's managing, because it makes the manager look like the bigger star. And so that's my biggest problem with him as a manager, is that he's just too tall.
Well, that's why he kind of fit with Buck, because Buck was a big dude. But yeah, Austin, it was just a weird fit with Austin. And I think you're right, Charles. That's made part of it too, is that he just is kind of imposing over his guys. All right, what did you think of the match, Charles?
I thought it started, like, the first half of it was kind of just disjointed and slow and kind of all over the place. And then it picked up a lot in the second half. I really liked Austin trying to get himself disqualified and not being able to do so. But at the same time, Steamboat's not really like a threat. He doesn't really wrestle as an aggressive guy. He's more of a finesse guy. So it was kind of odd to me in some ways that he's trying to get himself disqualified because he's scared of Ricky Steamboat. When Ricky Steamboat's not really the fearsome or imposing type. But one thing, I mean, the match definitely is bad. Like, they worked hard. They did some really good stuff. It just really didn't come together to me. Like, I think they had much better matches elsewhere, at other times in WCW, more so than here. But one thing about this match, and this is true for WCW from day one to the bitter end, anytime you want to pop a WCW crowd, tease a tombstone pile driver and then reverse it. And it will always pop a crowd, no matter what, in WCW. So, I mean, it was a solid match, but Austin and Steamboat have done way better than this.
What did you think, Scott?
I think this match was... It surprised me when I first watched it a long time ago, and it still surprises me now. I know Austin was always a big Steamboat guy, and it was an honor for him to be in a spot, and this was the spot I expected Steamboat to be in all year. That's why I was not happy with the whole whining about title shots and all that crap. This was perfect. The way Austin had been working all year, this was the perfect guy for him, other than Regal, but that wasn't going to happen. 20 minutes, yeah, I could give them 20 minutes. I don't know. I just love the flow. I think Austin worked Steamboat's pace. I think Steamboat works a little differently now, a little older. Yeah, there was everything about this match I liked. The crowd seemed to be into it. And I think for me, this is where the show peaked. These two matches in a row, the tag and the Austin Steamboat match, is where the show peaked. I think Will, your dreams of chaos and throwing things at each other is going to start shortly.
It's not going to start with this match, because I'm in your camp. I love this match. Mm-hmm. And total disclaimer, I have not watched the other matches, Austin Steamboat matches, in a while, or taken notes on them or really paid attention to them. So I don't know if it's better or not. So I'm not going to disagree with Charles that this is the least of the matches. But I am going to disagree with him on two points. The first point is that the first half was unfocused. I thought the first half was really focused, because it was really about Steamboat working the arm. And that's a Steamboat staple, working the arm, but they played it up a lot. Like, you know, when he's working the arm early on, Austin mounts some offense. Steamboat gets a body slam, but he makes sure he has that hammerlock body slam, you know, where the arm's behind the opponent. And so when he slams him, he's slamming the arm, you know, behind the back. And then you know, Steamer, he keeps going back to that arm. And there was this one transition where Austin finally gets an Alabama slam, you know, the hardcore Holly finisher. I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking about. The big back whip. And Austin finally gets this transition. But his arm, he's just like selling the fuck out of his arm like, shit, now I know why people hate getting hooked in those arm drags and those arm bars by Ricky Steamboat, because my arm is just dangling. So I actually thought the first half was really focused on that arm. And then Austin just, you know, he says, okay, Steamboat's working my arm. I'm going to work on his neck and his back. So all of his offense goes on to that neck and back area, the dive and knee drop, the swing and net breaker, a sweet falling clothesline. And then he even does like this legs, like it's a chin lock with Rick Rude, but instead of like sitting on him, he just squeezes his legs in that chin lock. So he's working on that neck and back, the whole area. And so to some, like if you're just kind of watching the match, I could see where it would just be slow and whatever. But if you look at like the body parts they're focused on, which is what I was focused on, I thought it was really focused and clear what they were doing. And then that second half, like Charles said, man, it picks up and it's about Austin getting DQ'd. And this is where I'm going to disagree with Charles on the second point, is where he says Steamboat's more of a technical guy. Why would he be threatened by Steamboat? Well, because Steamboat's an ex-world champion who was just fighting for the world championship. You know, if he's reached a point where I've never reached, well, I'm going to be scared of that guy, because that guy knows how to get to the top of the mountain. I mean, granted, I mean, we're talking in a work sense. We're not talking kayfabe, who our friends back, you know. But, you know, to me, I just thought it was awesome. And then to have, like, little, like, things like Austin or Steamboat using the stun gun, you know, which even the announcers brought up was an Austin move, you know. And then the end, you know, with Austin getting that win with the feet on the ropes. Classic heel shit, man. I thought this match was awesome. I didn't think the pay-per-view peaked with this match, but I Charles, I mean, if you want to disagree with those contentions I had with you, man, I mean, it's cool. If not, you know, cool. But I had to disagree with you on those two points.
No, I mean, it's okay. I mean, I didn't get nearly as much out of it as you did, but I'm glad that you did.
Yeah, and maybe it is because you've seen the whole series, too, and I haven't. So to me, if this is my introduction to the series, I'm more excited than somebody who's already seen, like, a couple of super badass matches with them, you know. So I can see watching it in a box or watching it as part of a storyline arc, how people would have different thoughts. But I loved it. What did you think, Justin?
I liked it a lot, too. I'm with you, Will. I really enjoyed the match. These guys just have a really fun chemistry. And again, you could tell Austin has a ton of respect for Steamboat. And when Austin has a lot of respect for a guy, you can tell it comes through in his work. And he apes and fits, I thought, to the style of the guy he respects. So I thought he did it with Bret Hart, and I feel like he does it with Steamboat. He plays into their strength. And the thing I like about Austin is he lets, and I thought the same thing as Dustin Rhodes, he lets the guy get him over instead of trying to get himself over. So he lets Steamboat do the work in putting Austin over instead of trying to bust his ass and make himself look good at Steamboat's expense. And I think that's the you know, it shows great trust and it shows confidence in a guy like Steamboat to put him over. And that's what I really liked about this match. And I thought it was a good stepping stone. I agree with you 100%, Will, that it was a good spot for him. This is a guy that was in world title feuds months earlier, and now Austin's elevated to a feud with him. I think it's the biggest vote of confidence we've seen in Austin since the breakup of the Blondes when they lost the tag titles.
And that just goes to how smart Austin is, because remember in that six man in the cage, Austin was taking that glory, man. He was doing the big cage bumps and kind of stealing the show. So he knew, like in a multi-man match like that, hey, I got to steal the show. I got to get mine, right? But in a match like this with Steamboat, like you said, he's going to let Steamboat get his and show him that respect. Mm-hmm. Real quick, guys, do all of y'all listen to the Steve Austin podcast?
I listened to the one he did with Jim Ross yesterday.
Okay.
It was really good. I have more saved. Yeah, I have more saved. I haven't listened to more than that, but It was really good. I enjoyed it.
Well, I know, like, he did the HBK one where they talk about him and HBK, and, like, HBK was, you know, he was kind of politician. Like, yeah, I was in a bad place at the time when he was trying to talk about, you know, that WrestleMania 14 moment. Man, could you imagine, like, Austin interviewing Steamboat on his podcast and say, hey, man, how did you feel when I ended your career? You know, I mean, like, it just get that moment out into the open, man. Like, so that's kind of like my mark out. Podcast wish is Steve Austin interviewing Steamboat about their series of matches in 94. Anyway.
All right, guys, let's get to the tag title match. We'll be quick with this one so we can spend a little bit of time on Hogan. Pretty Wonderful defeats Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. Pretty Wonderful, of course, Paul Roma and Paul Orndorff. I like them as a team in theory. I love the music. I like the look, the attitude, but I find them just a little bit boring. And I thought this match, after watching Jack and Sullivan and Max Payne go nuts balls to the wall, these brawls, all of a sudden be forced into a 20-minute kind of mat wrestling fest with Pretty Wonderful. It felt just bland to me. Like, I was hyped for another brawl with these guys. And we know Orndorff can do it because him and Cactus had one at the Clash the year before, or a couple years before. And Roma can adapt, you know, to whatever.
He can exist and breathe.
Exactly. That's my point, more than adapting. So this one disappointed me a little bit because I'm like, oh, 20 minutes, and it was just kind of there. And I know that Cactus is going to be on his way out, so they were kind of building towards that. But it was kind of sad to see after that whole quest that they lose the titles this quickly to Pretty Wonderful. And I get why. And like I said, I liked the concept of Pretty Wonderful, but the execution of watching them was not a high point. So let's just get really quick thoughts on this, Charles.
Yeah, and you know, during this time, WCW was taping everything so far in advance that Cactus wrote in Have a Nice Day that before they even won the titles at Slamboree, he saw Pretty Wonderful doing a promo at a worldwide taping about how they had beaten Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan for the tag team titles when they didn't even know they were going to win them yet.
That's so right.
That just shows how WCW was kind of run at that point. But yeah, this match, I'm pretty sure it's still going on. This was a long, long tag team match. I'm not sure that it ever ended. And that was my main takeaway from it, is just that it was a long match. And there were a few moments that were kind of okay. And I liked them doing the spot where they blocked the turnbuckle, because that's always a fun spot, and I would never expect to see that in a Cactus Jack match. So that was cool, but other than that, this just lasted several hours.
I agree. It sucked.
So does this usurp the Renegade match? I mean, the Renegade. Jim Steele match for you?
Same thing.
No, but it wasn't that bad. I mean, it was just on a show this good, man. This stuck out like a sore thumb. This is the only bad match on the show for me. This is 20 minutes. If they had given these guys 10 minutes, I probably could have enjoyed it for what it was.
Yeah,
way too long, way too boring. Orndorff and Roma do not have a variety of offense to give. They were in control way too long for me to care, when I don't care about either guy.
And they could have dispersed the time a little bit. You could have given another couple to the Vader and Guardian Angel, another couple to Steven and Regal and Bad. You know, another minute or two to Dustin. So, I mean, they could have broken up that extra 5 or 6 minutes easily.
Another backstage vignette.
Anything.
You know?
Could have whittled this down. Weird placement, too. You get the hot Austin match, and then you just kind of flatten the crowd out before Hogan, instead of building the back up. Maybe you switch this even with Vader, Guardian Angel, and you have that stiff, quick 8-minute match in between. This was just kind of a death march to the main event.
Or make this the dark match.
Just not have
or
it.
Have Hogan pump an iron or, something.
Have Mancow, whatever the hell match was before it. All right, so let's get to our main event, the debut of Hulk Hogan challenging Ric Flair with Sensuous Sherry for the WCW World Heavyweight title. 21 minutes, Hogan pins Flair with a leg drop. Scott, we'll start with you. Where does this rank in your Hogan kind of greatest match list? What did you think of it? Did it live to the hype of the Hogan Flair match we've all waited so long for? And did you think it was fair to Flair to put him into this spot after the great yeoman's work he had done in 94 to turn around, have to turn heel abruptly and put Hogan over?
Absolutely not. This whole thing was a bunch of crap. We'll talk about the match as a standalone. We'll talk about the match as a standalone. Because you asked me about the match as a standalone, then I'll talk about the whole thing surrounding it. The match is a standalone. Believe it or not, gentlemen, I had it on in the event center on mute while we were recording last night. So to watch again, I didn't mind it. I didn't mind the match as it's a lot of stalling, a lot of crap around the ring. Hogan's not exactly a work rate genius, and this was, you know, he's old to begin with. He wasn't a work rate genius if they met 10 years earlier. But it was good for what it was. It was fine. Having said that, I think it was evident that the company, the roster, was not thrilled about this.
Well, maybe.
I mean, sure, they were thinking, you know, look, if anybody was thinking they were going to get WrestleMania 3 paydays out of this, they were on crack. I think Flair, who had a huge moment at Starrcade and is the face of this company, obviously there's a reason they took you. We talked about it earlier, both Will, you, Charles, all four of us made the point. There's a reason why Sting is not here. And that's because when it comes to brass tacks, you can put as many ugly looking Hulkamania shirts on half these guys, these fans. The fact remains is Flair is the face of the South. Pure and simple. And to turn him abruptly heel just so this guy could sign his contract, walk down an empty street sitting in a car or whatever, and then walk right in here, win the belt, walk backstage where nobody looked like they cared, walked into this whatever that bar, whatever the hell, a restaurant thing, just so you can see Beefcake, Duggan, and every other hack that Hogan hangs out with in the post-match press conference was really sad. And to have Mr. T there, and oh my God, how schlocky, so bad, and the whole thing,
Shaq.
The whole thing, Shaq. Well, Shaq. Well, that's his house. Hogan was in Shaq's house. Damn it. but the whole thing just left a bad taste in my mouth. It really did. I didn't like it at all. To walk in, win the belt, and that's it. Just so predictable. And I think WCW sold their soul to the devil, to be honest with you.
Jeez. But, all right, Will, what do you think coming off of that soliloquy, if you will?
Well, you know, I mean, I took it. I tried to block out the booking, because if you look at the booking of the pay-per-view, the booking was pretty atrocious for the pay-per-view as a whole. Okay, so Regal wins the first match, but he's a heel, so that's one heel. Vader versus Guardian Angel. Guardian Angel loses the match on a DQ. That's the second one. The third heel win was a heel turn by Arn. So three heels in a row. Then you have Austin beating Ricky Steamboat with his feet on the ropes. Another heel turn. Then Cactus and Sullivan lose the belts to probably the most unover team ever. And so you got like five fucking heel wins in a row, right? And so to send the fans home happy, you want the face to win. So you'd want Hogan to win because of the booking of the pay-per-view. But holy shit, was the booking bad on this pay-per-view. So from a booking and the spirit of what Scott says, I agree with. But I had to take all that out, man, because I can't live in a world where I just hate Hulk Hogan, you know. And I did it with Equalizer Jungle Jim. I did it with Harlem Heat and Thunder and Lightning. I did it with the Mark Merrow matches, with Jimmy Garvin, with Terry Taylor. I went into this match saying, okay, Hogan versus Flair, will I like this match? I don't know. Let's watch the match. The spirit of what Scott says, agree completely, 100%. However, I think the match itself was really fun. I thought that it was great. I thought it was a greatest hits from both guys, with both guys using what they've gotten success over the years with, and that unfortunately for Flair, the things that Hogan got has at his disposal won him the match. Having said that, I love the stretch run. There were so many like false finishes in the sense that, okay, there's like a point where I thought, okay, Hogan reverses the figure four or whatever, or puts the figure four on Flair after Flair had attempted the figure four. He's going to win the match with the figure four. I really thought Hogan was going to, like, because of his ego, I'm not just going to beat Flair, I'm going to beat him with his own move. Okay. Then I knew Flair didn't win the match. So, but then when he had the brass knucks and knocks Hogan with the brass knucks, mm-hmm. I'm thinking, oh, fuck. if they would have had that brass knucks as the finish with Flair winning with the brass knucks, I think that would have been a great way to keep Flair strong and then set up the pay-per-views. Yeah, that would have been awesome.
I agree. I just cannot see them jobbing Hogan in his debut match. I mean, it makes all the sense in the world, but with all the hoopla and with all the celebrities and everything, I mean, I get why they didn't do it.
Could you imagine, like, the amount of, like, you know, Hogan was always hesitant to turn heel for the NWO, and it kind of, like, it gave him a second Hall of Fame run, so to speak, as a headliner and a draw. Could you imagine if Hogan comes in there, gets knocked out by Flair, the kind of press? Then you actually have Hogan going into the next match as a sympathetic babyface who was wronged by all this hoopla with Sherry, the brass knucks. Yeah, so the booking part, I agree with Scott. The actual match itself, the execution, the ebbs and flows of the match, loved. So I got to give the match a real thumbs up. I really like this match a lot. But the booking atrocious.
I just got to say this, though. When he misses, it wasn't as bad when it happened. I don't know why it didn't bug me as much at WrestleMania 6 when he missed the leg drop and Hogan and Warrior pinned him. But when he misses the leg drop and he's like rubbing his ass and rubbing his thighs, I'm like, geez, it's not like you fell on the fucking floor. It's like
he's selling, man. That's selling. We like selling in wrestling, brother.
I agree. I know, but I mean, for God's sakes, it's been a shitty finisher for 25 years. I don't know.
All right.
You know what, Will?
I'm
sorry.
Put the flare mark to bed here for a second.
Oh, Scott, this is why I enjoy these shows that we've done the last two nights, man, because, you know, we want dissension, man. When you said you fucking hated this match, I was like, wow, man, because I like this match a lot. And I know when we get to Charles, man, Charles is going to have his own take on this match.
Oh, let's do that right now, too, Charles. What do you think?
Transition.
Well, there's two things to talk about here. One is the match and one is the booking. I'm going to talk about the match. Well, actually, no, I want to talk about the booking first. I think, like, if you're going to sign Hulk Hogan, of course you're going to make him the top star. Of course, I mean, because otherwise he serves no value if you don't build around him. So I get that. What I don't get is, okay, you're going to lay down for Hogan and everything and give him what he wants, but when he's being presented, like in a kayfabe sense, he should not be presented as someone who the promotion is laying down for and giving everything that he wants. He should be presented as someone who still has to work for what he gets.
Something to prove. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And so for a guy who hasn't beaten anyone to come in and win the world title in his first match, first of all, that rubs me the wrong way, even when it is someone of Hogan's caliber, because it really pushes the idea that Hogan is better than the promotion. But also, on top of that, whether it's true or not, and it's not true, Ric Flair is not a star at the level of Hulk Hogan. And, you know, I'm not going to argue that he is. But these are the two guys that, I mean, this was a huge dream match for a decade. In the 80s, I mean, Ric Flair versus Hulk Hogan was the match that everyone thought would never happen, that everyone wanted to see. And I feel like both in the WWF version of this feud, which is a whole other story, and in this version, there was never a presentation of Flair versus Hogan where they were treated as equals. Flair was not like an icon and a superstar in his own right. Flair was Hulk Hogan opponent. And that was my problem with the way that this was presented. If they were presented as two, like, you know, the two biggest stars in the galaxy instead of just Hogan versus, you know, the world champion, then I might have not had such a problem with the booking here. So that's the issue. Like, I think, like, they changed the entire image of the promotion to kind of reflect like 80s WWF.
Oh, which, yes.
There's no reason to do that. I think Hogan could have fit into WCW, but they needed him. I don't know. Like, it doesn't really benefit him. It doesn't really benefit the promotion to do it as a nostalgia act. They needed to find a way to make Hogan relevant in their setting. And sure, maybe, you know, I mean, because it's the biggest signing they ever had. Maybe they needed to make some changes to their landscape in order to accommodate Hogan. Like, I think that's reasonable. But it wasn't a case where they met halfway. It was a case where Hogan just came in and changed everything, and they were just so happy to have him that whatever he wanted, he got. And
And it's one thing for that to happen, you know, when you read about it in The Observer, and it's another thing for that to actually play itself out on television, and I don't want to see it play itself out on television. Now, about the match. I actually do think this was an excellent match. But the booking, like, does kind of put a little bit of a stench on it. But the layout is really good. Like, some things I felt to me, just because I don't know that Hogan could do them so smoothly, you could tell some things were practiced meticulously, but it still felt organic. Like, it's a big match, and it feels grandiose, which is what Flair versus Hogan should be. But this didn't feel like a Flair match. And what I mean by that is that Flair was just the heel. He was just Hulk Hogan's opponent. This was a Hogan match as far as the layout and the Hulk up at the end. Like, if you're ever going to do a match where they play around with Hogan's traditional finish, like maybe he goes for the leg drop and doesn't miss, or maybe he has to do a different finish, like maybe they could, you know, we were talking about alternative finishes for this match. Maybe Hogan still gets a clean pinfall and wins the match, but maybe instead of getting the big boot and the leg drop at the end, he gets a weaker finish, like an inside cradle or something like that, that isn't quite as decisive, that seems like it's a little bit more of a fluke, because that still leaves the door open for rematches where you can have something more decisive. So, I mean, anyone who bought this show and paid to see Hogan versus Flair probably didn't leave disappointed, unless they were Flair fans who wanted him to kick Hogan's ass, which is kind of where I fall. But
you knew it was never going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, they delivered a satisfying match. It seemed like a big deal. It made Hogan look relevant and like a guy that could still go. But only within the context of this match. Like, in terms of like everything else in WCW, it just, I don't know. I really don't like the way that they brought him in at all, because it all felt so astroturf and forced. It's like they didn't trust Hogan's stardom at all, so they felt like they had to manufacture everything, and I think that's why he was getting booed a lot in some markets.
I think it's a great, astute take on it. I think Hogan was forced, and they went right to it. They're like, oh, we got Hogan, gonna get the title on him immediately. They felt like they couldn't be a build to it, that they had to just blow it off immediately. Instead of letting the Flair heel turn happen organically, and maybe let Hogan run through a couple of contenders first to build him up, and then you get to that maybe at Starrcade, where Flair slowly turns heel. Maybe they start as a tag team. Maybe you do a tag match with them on a clash, and then Flair slowly turns on him, and then you go to the match. Instead of this, the forced, predictable heel turn in full reset. And the reset is something we're going to talk about next time you guys are on. You know, were they better off with Hogan or not? Because as we hit those last few shows, we'll be able to determine. So what I want to do quickly here is just run through a few awards and a few lightning round questions. So really just give a quick answer on these. We'll go Scott, Will, then Charles. Scott, Bobby or Jesse in 1994? Because they kind of did this weird hybrid mix here.
Hard question. Jesse.
Will?
I'm with Scott, Jesse.
Charles?
Jesse.
All right. Was this the best four pay-per-view stretch in wrestling history?
No.
Oh, yes.
I'm going to say yes until I'm proven wrong. I say yes with an asterisk, but I might be wrong.
I say the same, but for the four pay-per-views I've seen back-to-back-to-back-to-back, by far my favorite four pay-per-views in a row put together.
Do you think Super Brawl or Bash at the Beach makes a better bookend, Scott?
Super Brawl.
Will?
I'm going to go the other way. As much as I love Super Brawl, because I think it was a great pay-per-view, I'm going to say Bash at the Beach, which only had the tag match as a bad match.
Charles?
I'm going to go Bash at the Beach also.
Me too. I think it was a better show than Super Brawl. All right. Awards time. Here we go. This is where it all comes together. Who was the most disappointing performer you witnessed on these shows? Scott.
Pretty wonderful. Will? Pretty bad.
Pretty bad.
Pretty pitiful. Pretty pitiful.
Will?
You know, for me, I don't think I'm going to get any fans for saying this. To me, it was Cactus Jack.
Wow.
And the reason I say that is every match, except for that last bad match with Pretty Wonderful, he does a stupid bump or takes a stupid shot. And knowing, you know, the kind of problems that Foley's having, you know, with memory and what we know about wrestling now, just seeing those shots made me cringe. Like, I didn't go, holy shit, that's the coolest thing ever. I went, man, I feel, why is Foley killing himself like that when all the wrestlers around him are working so much smarter and they're not as bad off as he is? But, you know, that's just me.
Charles?
I'm going to go kind of in a weird way and say Bobby Heenan, just because he came across as such an old has-been with dated jokes.
Yeah.
Although I loved in Flair versus Steamboat when he said, you should see the robe Flair wears at home. Like that, I die laughing. Every time I hear him say that, I die laughing. But yeah, other than that, he just seemed like such a relic.
I thought he had moments, and I thought him and Shivani got better. And then I liked him with the Flair stuff at Bash of the Beach the best. And then I thought he gets even a little bit better with the stuff that we'll get to at a Fall Brawl. But I mean, he definitely was disappointing. I thought they kind of wasted Jesse at the time. Although Jesse seemed to already be in like governor mode. He had like the suit on, and he had it was more kind of political when he was talking, and he wasn't like the old just kind of flamboyant Jesse. So it was kind of a weird vibe anyway with him.
Had he already been governor? I mean, did he win mayor yet?
Yeah, he had already been mayor, but not. Obviously not governor.
Not governor.
Yeah. He was mayor of Brooklyn. I think he was mayor at the time, wasn't he? At this point?
Yeah, because Tony says congratulations to him at some point in one of these shows. I think it was Slamboree says congratulations to him.
We can look it up. To me, my most disappointing was Barry Windham. Kind of sad to see him at that point. And you think of the matches him and Flair had in 87, and then you look at this mess. But
that's a good one, man. Yeah.
So, all right, how about the surprise wrestler for you, Scott? Who were you most surprised by?
Johnny B. Badd.
Yep. I'm with Scott, man. Johnny motherfucking be bad.
Yep.
He is a bad man.
Charles?
Yeah, Johnny be bad all the way.
I would agree. I think Johnny be bad too. Just to confirm, we have Ventura was mayor from 91 to 95. So this was in the middle of his term.
Wow.
Yep, so he was mayor during these shows. So he was mayor the whole time he was doing WCW pretty much, which is kind of crazy to think about. I went with Bad as well for surprise. All right, who is your MVP of these shows, Scott? Most valuable player of all these pay-per-views?
Oh, no doubt, Steven Regal.
Will?
Hands
down. Yeah, I'm going to go Steven Regal with honorable mention runner-up Dustin Rhodes.
And I got to throw Austin in there for maybe a vote or two, too.
Yeah, him too, man. Number 2A, 2B.
Charles?
I'm going to say Vader.
Nice.
Those are all the guys you mentioned were going to be my three. Were Austin, Vader with Regal 1, and then Dustin right under him. So those four guys all stood out across these four shows.
It's awesome.
All right. Best match of the whole set. So the best, if you were picking the best match from these four shows, the one you're going to watch again over and over, Scott, which are you picking?
Regal and Arn from Super Brawl.
Will?
It was tough, man, but yeah, I'm going to go Regal Arn also, man. One of my Match of the Year contenders.
Charles?
Regal Arn, but with Dustin Bunkhouse Buck from Spring Stampede is a very close second.
Nice.
I'll go with the crowd. Arn Regal, but with a little surprise for my runner-up is Vader Boss from Spring Stampede. That to me, that is one of my favorite all-time WCW matches. And my favorite match on that show, and one I could watch over and over. They're just beating the crap out of each other.
I wouldn't argue with any of you guys. That's how much I love these shows, man. They're all great.
All right, and let's finally rank the pay-per-view, Scott. 4-1.
Slamboree. Bash at the Beach. Super Brawl. Spring Stampede.
Hmm. Will?
Okay. I'm going to have to go Super Brawl as my least favorite, but with my favorite match. Then I'm going to go Bash at the Beach because of the booking. and then Slammeree, and then to me, what might be in contention for one of the greatest pay-per-views of all time, Spring Stampede.
Charles?
Yeah, I would say Spring Stampede. Wait, we're going 4-1?
Yes.
Okay.
Lowest to highest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I would go Super Brawl as number 4, Bash at the Beach is number 3, Slamboree is number 2, and Spring Stampede is number 1.
I would agree with that ranking that you and Will have. It's interesting. Super Brawl has the best match and then was the worst show overall. But Spring Stampede, to me, is the most balanced and has the most consistent high quality. So, all right, guys, we did it. It was a marathon. It took two parts, but we got through the first half of WCW 1994. I think we hit all the major players, all the major angles, and broke down the cards. And we're going to do this shit again.
Yeah, this is fun.
We'll have to take
some
time.
These last two nights were a blast.
We'll probably have to take a good 5 or 6 weeks, I think, to mentally prepare. But we're going to do Clash 28, Fall Brawl, Halloween Havoc, and Starrcade to wrap up 1994.
Well, the cool thing is we won't have to give that much background because we'll already have done that on this show. So
yeah, but we're all insane, so we're going to probably. So, <We're>, but this was a ton of fun, guys. As always, thank you so much for joining us, and I'm looking forward to that part two. Scott, we'll be back this weekend. You're going to be here in Rhode Island, and we are going to throw some wrestling in. And we have a mailbag post on PlaceToBeNation.com's Facebook page, Facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, where you can ask us any question about any topic. And we're going to sit here with some beers, we're going to watch some wrestling, and we're going to answer your mailbags. We already got a ton in there, so we're in a pretty busy episode. I'm hoping you're going to be punchy from the long drive in, and we'll have a couple gansets, and we'll let loose. Oh, yeah. And then next week, we got the year in review, Greg Phillips and Nate Milton. We have Brian Papa on Monday to talk about a simulation game, and we'll kind of look forward to the Rumble and some other shows as well. And then a major interview the week after. Should we announce it now? Yeah, why not? You want to do it now?
Certainly.
All right, January 13th, Steve Carino enters the Place to Be podcast. We'll be
your
chatting
boy.
We'll be chatting with my man, Mr. Carino, best play-by-play man, or best color man, I should say, in the business. Of course, the partner to Kevin Kelly and Ring of Honor. Really looking forward to talking to Steve. So we'll do that on January 13th, as well as some other major announcements coming down the line. So a lot going on. Visit us at PlaceToBeNation.com. You can find all the great podcasts from the PWO guys. That includes Goodwill Wrestling. That includes Wrestling with the Past. That includes the Titans of Wrestling as well, and Where the Big Boys Play. And, of course, our show, the Place to Be podcast as well. So for Will, for Charles, for Scott, and myself, this is the Place to Be podcast. Thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back this weekend inside the PTV Man Cave with me and Scott. I try to keep my faith in my people, but sometimes my people be acting like they evil. You don't understand about running with a gang, cause you don't gangbang. And you don't have to stand on the corner and slang, cause you got your own thing. You can't help me if you can't help yourself. You better make a layup. And then you die, still trying to get a piece of the apple pie. Every game ain't the same, cause the game still remains. Don't it seem kinda strange, ain't a damn thing changed. If you don't work, then you don't eat. And only down ass niggas can ride with me. Hop, 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 if I quickly down the block. Stay sucker free and keep the busters off your jock. You gotta have heart, son, if you wanna go. Watch this sweet chariot swing low. Ain't nobody crying, ain't nobody dying, ain't nobody worrying.